Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from Novo Nordisk, committed to diabetes care and changing lives for more than 90 years. NovoNordisk-US.com. From Chevrolet, maker of the Bolt, with electric technology to get there and fuel to go farther. Details at ChevyVolt.com. And from Squarespace, providing domains, websites, and 24/7 support to creative professionals and small businesses. Learn more at squarespace.com. This is NPR.
He never had a blazing fastball, but last year at age 49, Jamie Moyer became the oldest pitcher ever to win a game in the big leagues. On the next Fresh Air, Moyer tells us about keeping hitters off balance, wearing a garter belt on the mound, and how a self-taught sports psychologist helped him to be more effective in his 40s than his 20s. He has a new memoir. Join us.
Support for KTOO is provided by Davies Berry Insurance, serving southeastern Alaska since 1917 with personal and commercial insurance, including property, liability, workers' compensation, bonds, marine, auto, homeowners, life, and health policies. 789-5900.
The third annual KRNN Spotlight Series kicks off with four dynamic duos, George and Bridget Kuhar, Allie Kane and Aaron Hansen, Old Soft Days Irene Muller and Ian Leonard, and The Wool Pullers, Liz Snyder and Alex Cutlars. Music and conversation. Tuesday, October 8th, 7 p.m. at the Goldtown Theater. Beer and wine sales. Tickets at krnn.org or at the station during regular business hours.
Support comes from Northern Audiology and Hearing Services, providing services for identification, evaluation, and rehabilitation for individuals with hearing difficulties. Located in the Jordan Creek Center. Information at 789-6780.
And good afternoon. The time is 3 o'clock and you are tuned to KTOO. This is a Juno afternoon for Tuesday, October 1st. My name is Martha Moore. We have a great program for you today. We'll get to the details for this Thursday's fundraiser for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Beth Weigel will be here with an update on activities happening at the Juno Public Library. Frank Katas will be here to highlight Saturday's Juno Little Theater Acting Workshop. Adrienne Schwartz from the School District Food Service Program will be here to talk about the program and the nutritional Alaskan foods that are offered as menu selections each month. That, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more. The forecast today for the rest of the day is calling for scattered rain showers, highs around 53. Tonight, mostly cloudy, isolated rain showers. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy, isolated rain showers, highs around 52.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Obama administration is briefing tribal leaders about how the government shutdown may impact Indian country. Clara Pratt is executive director of the Navajo Nation Washington, D.C. office. She says one of the things the administration is focusing on is the protection of life, health, and safety, like emergency services and law enforcement. Pratt says one of the concerns is that with the government shutdown, tribes may be self-funding services with no guarantee of getting that money back.
And I think there tends to be an idea that tribes or any government, any municipal government or tribal government, will get a pot of money at the beginning of a fiscal year. And typically that's not the way it works. What happens is that there's money available for tribes to draw down against. So we expend funds and then we get reimbursed for some of those funds. What happens in the case of a shutdown is there's no guarantee that there's a pot for us to draw down against.
Pratt says the immediate impact of the shutdown varies from tribe to tribe depending on their financial resources.
The real challenge for tribal governments will be not having a counterpart on the other end of the line, if you will. Another great example is the Navajo Nation floods that has just recently occurred. We received a technical assistance grant to help us with our flood issues. Well, we don't have anybody on the other end at FEMA to administer that grant. So while we have the grant, we don't have anybody there to distribute it, respond to us.
Tribes are being asked to make contingency plans. It's unclear how long the shutdown may last. On Sunday, a group of Anishinaabe horseback riders began a 9-day journey along a pipeline. They're raising awareness about land use issues and tribal sovereignty. As J.P. Rehnquist reports, the riders started in Superior, Wisconsin, near an Enbridge Energy office.
This ride is being coordinated by Honor the Earth, a national Native American and environmental group that was founded by Winona LaDuke and folk pop music duo The Indigo Girls. With the brilliant reds, yellows, and oranges of Fond du Lac's fall color changes surrounding the riders, LaDuke talked about the ride from the back of her gray speckled horse.
Praying for all the little relatives like the rice and the little animals in the woods and things that should have good water in the future.
While at Fond du Lac, LaDuke and other riders met with tribal officials and local community members to discuss the potential threat of a pipeline spill and other environmental threats. The riders are continuing on towards Leech Lake Reservation today. The ride concludes next week near White Earth Reservation in northwest Minnesota, where LaDuke is an enrolled member. For National Native News, I'm J.P. Rehnquist.
A commemorative art project for missing and murdered Indigenous women in Canada is set to debut Wednesday in Edmonton, Alberta. Polly Dinetclaw has more.
The Walking with Our Sisters exhibit consists of 1,725 moccasin tops, each representing the unfinished life of a murdered or missing woman. More than 1,200 artists from around the world, including Australia and Germany, contributed to the project. Lead coordinator Christy Belcourt says it's estimated that more than 600 women have gone missing in Canada.
To simply say that the lives of the women and girls who have gone missing are valuable, it's an honoring, is what we're doing.
The exhibit displays a path with pairs of moccasins traveling along the edges. As traditional music from 30 different artists plays in the background, the traveling exhibit is booked in more than 30 locations across Canada and the United States in the next 6 years. For National Native News, I'm Polly Dinetclaw.
In October 1962, the Institute of American Indian Arts opened in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The tribal college offers 4-year fine arts degrees. The institute celebrated 50 years in 2012 with events that included panel sessions, campus tours, and storytelling. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And you are tuned to KTOO, and this is a Juno Afternoon. And I have with me in the studio Roland Moika, and I have on the phone line Chad Bolduc. And they are both with the Confidential Employees Association, and they have joined us today to talk about a fundraiser for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And hello, Roland and Chad.
Hi, how are you this afternoon?
It's going good, and thank you for joining me today. You both work with the state of Alaska, and you're in the Confidential Employees Bargaining Unit, I understand. Have special positions with that organization, that association?
That's correct. We're both members of the board there.
What I want to know is tell me a little bit about this fundraiser that you're going to have, and tell me where and when it's going to be and what's going to go on there.
So we're going to be having this fundraiser on Thursday, October 3rd at 6 p.m. It starts at 6 p.m. That's when registration will actually begin at Marine Park right in Juneau. And we're actually going to start walking at 6:30 p.m. The format of this fundraiser is a walk-type fundraiser supported by donations that are elicited by the walkers that have registered for the event. And we're doing this through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, as you said. And the proceeds of all funds that are donated to the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society through events such as this Light the Night Walk are used to encourage scientists to pursue blood cancer research, to develop different targeted therapies, to test immunotherapies, to improve the safety of today's cures, to help patients and their families make informed choices about their care, to provide financial aid and copay assistance for patients, to offer community services, and also to encourage our state and federal legislators to support blood cancer issues.
And the leukemia and lymphoma, those two are have in common the fact that they are both blood cancers. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And here in the United States, about 9 people per hour are diagnosed with either leukemia or lymphoma. And those aren't even all of the blood cancers that are out there. There are several more, but those are definitely the two big ones. And between the two of them, about 9 people per hour are diagnosed.
Wow, that's impressive. And are these diseases curable?
They are very treatable. Whether or not they're curable depends on the specific situation. However, these funds that we're going to be raising through the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society do support new cures for patients and help to improve their lives while they're going through the process.
Do you have any idea how many Alaskans would be afflicted with this?
You know, I don't right off the top of my head. That's not really a statistic that I was able to find out there. Most of the statistics just concern the U.S. as a whole.
Mm-hmm. So this walk will be in Juneau, and Chad, you're in Anchorage, that's correct?
That's correct, but I'll actually be coming down to Juneau for the event.
Okay, and where will that be, that walk?
It's going to be starting at Marine Park, and we have a 1.5-mile route that will take us throughout the downtown area, and there will be folks at different intersections along that route, you know, pointing the way to go. It will be a very organized walk, so there won't be any confusion at all about that route. But if you just come down to Marine Park to start there, we should be all set.
And what time will the walk be?
The walk itself will start at 6:30 p.m., but registration will begin at 6 p.m. For those people who haven't already registered online. And I would like to encourage people to register online before going to that walk. That's a great way to get your name out there. You can actually register on the lightthenight.org website in order to get your own little personal donations page where your donors can go and use their credit cards to donate to you to sponsor you online.
Yeah, what was that website again?
That is lightthenight.org.
Lightthenight.
Yeah, correct. Lightthenight.org. Now, the quickest way to find the actual Juneau walk page on lightthenight.org is to actually just go to the main website, and then up in the upper right-hand corner, you'll see a link that'll allow you to search for teams or participants and search for the team Juneau, and we're the only one that will come up. Now, there could be some confusion there because for administrative purposes, because this is the first year that Juneau's done a walk like this, we are actually lumped in with the Seattle Walk. So we're sort of piggybacking the Seattle Walk. So people going to register online there might see some information for the Seattle Washington Walk, but don't be concerned about that. As long as you're signing up for the Juneau team, you're signing up for the right place.
Is there a specific registration fee, or is it just as people want to donate?
Absolutely not. There's no specific registration fee. We just encourage people to come out and walk. However, for people who raise $100 or more, there will be a couple special gifts for them. For one, they'll get a Light the Night walk t-shirt and also a lighted balloon to carry with them on the walk.
And these donations are tax deductible?
They absolutely are, and as a matter of fact, as soon as somebody donates online, they automatically get a receipt for that tax deduction emailed right to them. Also, we're more than happy to accept cash donations or check donations at the walk, and we will be giving receipts there as well. I'm also working on trying to set up a booth for signups where we would also be able to take the credit card information there as well.
So let me ask you, Chad, why is the Confidential Employees Association interested in doing this?
Well, we were looking for an event to have there in Juneau, some sort of charitable event, and this one just came right to the top for us out of all the different ones we looked at. What we were really interested in the most is helping out an organization that didn't have a presence in Alaska yet, and LLS doesn't have that. I believe there's only been a few Light the Night walks that have taken place in Alaska, and to my knowledge, none of them have been in Juneau. They've been in Anchorage. LLS doesn't actually have a chapter of their organization in Alaska, and that's why most Alaskans probably haven't heard that name yet. So since they don't have that chapter up here to organize a walk, the Confidential Employees Association volunteered to do the work for them.
And is this a typical role for a bargaining unit to do these kinds of things?
Absolutely. Public outreach is a big part of union organizations.
So let me ask Roland, you are here in Juneau. You work in Juneau, that's correct?
That's correct, yes.
And what have you, what's your role in this?
My role was to, I guess Chad would put it, a media boy, was to put together, you know, get advertisements out, get set up radio shows, and just get the word out.
Mm-hmm. And do you think there will be a lot of interest? Do you have any idea at this point?
I don't have any idea. I hope that there is a lot of interest because this is our first event, first Light the Night walk event in Juneau, so we would like to have this have a big event.
Great.
Or a big turnout.
Great. Well, I wish you luck with that. And is there anything else either one of you want to add about this event?
Yeah, absolutely. Just a couple of things. I wanted to add that LLS.org, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, which again is the organization that puts on Light the Night walks, is rated as a top-rated organization through CharityWatch.org, and what that means is that they are among the top charitable organizations as far as putting the most of the money that's gained through these types of events to the actual mission, to actually giving that money for research and for patient care.
That's great. When people are giving hard-earned money, I know that's really important.
Absolutely. Right now, LLS is actually right at about 78%. 78% of the money that comes in through donations goes to those causes, and only 8% of the funds are used for those administrative purposes that you hear a lot about with charities today.
Mm, that's great. Let's get back to the event itself. It is the meeting place is
Marine Park.
Marine
downtown,
Park,
uh-huh.
Downtown, and it's at 6:30 p.m. on Thursday. That's
yes.
The day after tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And did you say it was a mile and a half walk?
Yeah, it's going to be a mile and a half, and there's actually a shorter route that we've planned as well, an alternate route that's right around a half a mile for folks that want to come out but don't quite feel up to walking the full mile and a half.
Good. And so people can register online. Can they register when they show up?
Yeah, definitely. We're more than happy to accept registrations and donations at the event itself.
Okay, and this is a rain or shine event.
that's correct. It is. You
it
know,
is,
being Juneau in October, we did plan to for rain or shine. So we're going to be walking one way or another.
Yeah. So please dress for the weather. Bundle up.
Yeah, I think people in Juneau kind of know the drill. So, okay, and I know that there's a lot of information about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society online, because I went online myself to check it out, and I know that they do a lot of things, and there's a lot of information there. So I invite anyone who's more interested in that to look that up. And I want to thank you. I've been speaking with Chad Bolduc and Roland Moika, sorry.
Moika, it's all right.
about the Confidential Employees Association's fundraising event, which is a walk on Thursday evening at 6:30 p.m. And this is for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Thank you both for joining me.
Thank you very much. Thank and I just you. Want to put out one more time that that website is lightthenight.org. That's lightthenight.org.
Okay. Thank you both so much, and thank you for doing this. It's an important thing.
Thank you very
thank
much.
You.
And that was Keola Beamer, and Keola Beamer and R. Carlos Nakai will be here in Juneau and performing at JDHS Auditorium on Saturday, October 5 at 8 p.m. So there's some a special music program for the community. And you are tuned to KTOO. This is a Juneau afternoon, and I have with me in the studio Beth Weigel, and she is going to give us a city library update. And welcome, Beth.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Thanks for coming in. And first of all, let me just ask you, what do you do for the library?
Right. Well, I organize a variety of different programs at the libraries. We have, of course, three city libraries here in Juneau, the one that is downtown, and we have one at the Mendenhall Valley in the Mendenhall Mall, and then, of course, the Douglas Public Library as well.
So what would you like us to know about upcoming activities and events at the library?
Well, this is October is we've turned it into a whole month. It's actually known throughout the state as Alaska Author Week coming up here next week, but we've turned it into a whole month of visiting authors and a series of talks and activities being given by the authors that we have coming. So this Thursday night at 6:30 p.m. on October 3rd, we'll have Jonathan Waterman here, and he is a well-known adventurer. His talk is called The Evolution of an Adventurer. He's the author of 12 or so books, and most of them exploring really remote regions, particularly in Alaska, and he's an amazing photographer as well, so he'll have some really beautiful slides to show of many of his remote expeditions. And through his process of adventuring and writing books, he's become very, connected to a lot of the ecological issues that Alaska faces, and particularly wilderness. And so he's, got a conservation sort of focus as well with a lot of his work and his recent book called Northern Exposures, An Adventuring Career in Stories and Images, which is out in 2013 here through University of Alaska Press. So it's going to be a great opportunity to hear him speak, as well as he'll have a book signing afterwards, and that's at the Downtown Library this Thursday at 6:30. We'll continue our Alaska Author Month with Ernestine Hayes. Many of you may know her from the University of Alaska Southeast. She's also written a variety of books. Most people are familiar with Blonde Indian, that she's author of, and she will be at our downtown library on Thursday, October 10th, so a week from this Thursday, at 5:30, and she has a new upcoming book coming out called Juno Images of America. So that'll be really interesting. She has a great perspective on things, and she publishes fiction as well as other children's books, poetry, memoir, things like that. So Ernestine Hayes on October 10th at 5:30, Downtown Library. Our third Alaskan author to visit with us this month will be Kathy Hawker, and she is just out with a new children's book called When You See Flukes. So, of course, a fluke is the tail of the whale as it's diving, and they're all very specific. And so she's going to do a talk about her children's book, When You See Flukes, and you can learn all about illustrating for children's books, whales, and much more. That's going to be on October 19th at 1 p.m. in the Mendenhall Valley Library, and you actually get to create your own fluke pattern. She's a well-known artist as well as author of this book, and it's going to be a really exciting, interactive event with Kathy Hawker. And then, not to be outdone by any of these folks, Ray Troll is going to come to town at the end of October. He'll be giving a talk on Friday, October 25th at 6:30. That's also in the Downtown Library. And he, of course, is author of many different books, children's books like Sharkabet and science books for children, and he's got lots of great artwork out there as well. And so he's going to talk a lot about all the things that he loves, his shocking fish tales, fish, romance, all those things. So he'll be at the Downtown Library on Friday, October 25th at 6:30. And we still have just a very couple spaces left. I hesitate to even mention it, but he's doing a workshop the next day on a colored pencil drawing workshop from 1 to 4 at the Douglas Library, but it is limited, so we just have a couple of spaces left for that. But you can give us a call at the library to see if there's any more space left. So that's Alaska Book Author Month encapsulated right there. And we also provide many other services at the library, and we have a lot of interesting things available for all the back-to-school needs that people have. I know we're already a month into school pretty much, but we've got a lot of resources available on our website, including live homework help, which is if young students or even college students or other people need some assistance with their homework, they can get online with a live person who's in Alaska, and they can get proofreading or ask their questions and things like that. And actually, one of the folks who works with this, tutor.com is the website that you go to, or you can get there through our website at the Juneau Public Library. And they'll be here on October 11th, Friday, from noon to 1 at the Valley Public Library to talk a little bit more about that resource. Also, there'll be someone talking about the Mango Languages resource that's available if you're interested in learning a new language. Mango Languages is a great way to get on board with that. And then another one of our resources called Novelist. It's for K through 8 kids who want lists of novels that might be interesting for their age group. So those are all some exciting back-to-school resources. And on October 11th, you can learn a little bit more about those from noon to 1 at the Valley. We have ongoing, of course, our bookmark contest still underway. You can pick up your forms for kids that want to create the latest and most interesting bookmark. And we choose who the winner will be, and we print a bunch of those up. And, of course, you can always get bookmarks as you're checking out of the library with that. And the deadline entry is the 15th, which is a Tuesday of this month. So get your forms, and you can download that off our website, or you can get them at the library.
Wow, that's an impressive lineup.
I know, and that's in addition to all the things that always go on at the library, which include toddler times on Mondays. We have one at the downtown library and one at the Valley Library, and we also have story times for preschoolers, and that happens on Wednesdays at the downtown library at 11, and Thursdays at 11 at Douglas, and Fridays at 11 at the Valley. So lots of time for doing that. And we're also having our third last thing that we have ongoing every month is every third Thursday we have a family night, and for our October 3rd Thursday we'll have the Fowlers coming and talking a little bit about their work. So, and it's a time for stories as well as families to join us at the Mendenhall library for our family nights.
So is everything that you've mentioned here free?
Everything is free at the library. That's right. Oh,
that is very impressive. And if people want to find out about these things, may have missed something or want to find out more, how can they do that?
They can visit our website at the public library. Go to if you go to juneau.org, and then you can get there from there. And you can come by the library. We have different flyers that are up that give out information. We have a calendar as well on our website, so you can see all the different activities happening on the calendar.
Okay.
Or give us a call at any of our branches, and folks can give you a little more information as well.
That's great. One last question. Is the elevator done?
The elevators are done. We just actually launched our elevators today. Well, they've been running for the last week, but we had a little ribbon-cutting ceremony, and the mayor came over and helped us cut the ribbon, and we're launching into reading now in the fall, and everybody is welcome to come to the library. And
just to ride the elevators.
Just
new
to ride the elevators, exactly. They're really sleek and fast and smooth, and so we're very happy about the completion of that project. Thanks so much to all the engineer folks and the folks who helped with that project. They got it done in record time, done early. So,
and the patience of the public.
And the patience of the public. But, you know, our numbers didn't really drop that much over the summer. We still had lots of people coming up to the library.
And everyone's in better shape now.
Exactly. I think I heard Robert, our director, this morning telling the mayor that they calculated you could expend 15 calories every time you walked up the stairs. So yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I've been speaking with Beth Weigel, and she's from the city library system, and telling us about all the many things that are going on coming up. And thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday. It's the 1st of October, 2013. The first installment of Madame Bovary by Gustave Flaubert began appearing in a magazine in Paris on this day in 1856. The story of Emma Bovary, unhappy, who has an affair and in the end commits suicide. The French government brought Flaubert to trial on grounds of immorality, and he barely escaped conviction. It's the birthday of author Tim O'Brien, born in Austin, Minnesota, 1946, went to McAllister College in St. Paul, was drafted to go to Vietnam, and even though he was opposed to the war, he still went. Before he went off to Vietnam, he spent the day in northern Minnesota. He had a chance to cross the border into Canada, decided not to. He said, "I did not want people to think badly of me. My conscience told me to run, but I was ashamed of my conscience, ashamed to be doing the right thing." When he got back from Vietnam, he went to work at the Washington Post, wrote a book about Vietnam, "If I Die in a Combat Zone, Box Me Up and Ship Me Home," and other books about Vietnam, fiction, Going After Cacciato, July, July, and The Things They Carried, which came out in 1990. The title story, one of the most anthologized short stories in contemporary American literature, which begins, "First Lieutenant Jimmy Cross carried letters from a girl named Martha, a junior at Mount Sebastian College in New Jersey. They were not love letters, but Lieutenant Cross was hoping, so he kept them folded in plastic at the bottom of his rucksack. In the late afternoon, after a day's march, he would dig his foxhole, wash his hands under a canteen, unwrap the letters, hold them with the tips of his fingers, and spend the last hour of light pretending." It was on this day in 1971 the first CT scan, computed tomography scan, was performed on a patient. Sometimes it's called a CAT scan for computed axial tomography, a scan which produces images of cross-sections or slices of the human body, which enables doctors to examine soft tissues. The first scan was done at Atkinson's Morley's Hospital in London of a woman who had a tumor in her frontal lobe, which the CT scan saw. Here's a poem for today by William Wordsworth, a poem dated September 3, 1802, upon Westminster Bridge. "Earth has not anything to show more fair. Dull would he be of soul who could pass by a sight so touching in its majesty. This city now doth like a garment wear the beauty of the morning, silent, bare, ships, towers, domes, theatres and temples lie open unto the fields and to the sky, all bright and glittering in the smokeless air. Never did sun more beautifully steep in his first splendor valley, rock, or hill, ne'er saw I, never felt a calm so deep. The river glideth at his own sweet will. Dear God, the very houses seem asleep, and all that mighty heart is lying still." Upon Westminster Bridge, a poem by William Wordsworth. That's the Writer's Almanac, supported by LendingTree, where you can fill out one form and receive up to 5 loan offers at trylendingtree.com, NMLS 1136. And by Lumosity, Lumosity.com's daily online workouts are designed to improve memory and attention and are dedicated to helping people feel sharper, think faster, and remember more. More at Lumosity.com. Produced by Joy Biles with assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
And you are tuned to KTOO. This is a Juno afternoon, And I have with me in the studio Frank Kapass and Stacy Kapass, and they're here to talk about the Juno Douglas Little Theater Acting Workshop that's this weekend. And welcome, Frank.
Thanks.
And Stacy. And Frank, you were just here a week ago.
I was.
How did your writing workshop go?
It went really, really well. We had a pretty good turnout. And, you know, I think everyone learned a little bit, and we all, you know, got to write a little bit. And
it was fun, I bet.
Oh, it was really fun. You know, great group of people. And some of the people from the 24-Hour Miracle were there. The writers were 24-Hour Miracle, so they got a little bit of practice in before the show on the 18th and 19th of this month.
Okay. And so tell us about the acting workshop.
This is one that myself and Heather Laverne, she's a recent graduate from UAS, will be leading the workshop. And basically, I mean, these workshops are only 2 hours. They're from 1 to 3 on Saturday at the Nugget Mall Community Room. So, you know, it's hard to get too into depth, but we're going to just we have some improv and some exercises and then a little bit of scene work. So it should be pretty fun. And it's free, of course, open to the public.
Okay, great. And people just show up. Basically.
Yeah, you can show up. We have an invite coming out probably in later today from our Facebook group, facebook.com/ Juno Douglas Little Theater. And it's Theater R-E?
Theater R-E.
Right. So make sure to go and like that, and you can follow all of our workshop stuff.
The workshop's open for all ages and all community members, and it's free. We do ask if you're going to bring a child to have the adult stay,
right.
just to help us out a little bit. But we're kid-friendly. Well, we're trying to be, at least.
Right, yeah, we try to be.
But Frank and Heather really know what they're talking about. Frank graduated a couple years ago from the University of Hawaii with a theater degree.
Excellent.
And he did. He was a big shot there, an actor.
I wouldn't go that far.
And Heather just graduated from UAS, and she headed up the UAS Improv Club, and they had some very successful performances. And so she's coming from a theater background and an improv background.
Yeah, and so, I mean, some of the point, yeah, like you said, all ages, all experience levels welcome. I mean, part of our what we want to do with Juno Douglas Little Theater is to help people who have kind of always thought about acting or thought about directing or thought about, you know, writing to give them a good shot. And this is a great opportunity to kind of try to flex that muscle that's within all of us.
So what will actually go on at this workshop? And how do you teach acting? How do you learn acting?
Oh, I just do it, and I say, just like me. No, I don't know. I mean, it's all through a lot of acting is it's like any craft. You know, you need practice and you need repetition. So, I mean, this is kind of a good first step is doing some of the scene work and stuff like that. And you know, we'll give some tips and things like that, and a little bit of critique and, you know, positive feedback. And
the hardest part of acting is just getting up and doing it.
Right.
You have to get up. But once you get up and you're getting comfortable on stage, things start to fall into place. And so a lot of teaching acting is just getting people up there and doing different things, different activities, different.
Yeah. I mean, giving them the venue to do something like that is important. That's kind of what the inspiration behind doing this. And also it's kind of, I mean, this is the first step, you know, someone who's never acted before, something in the back of their head. I mean, when I first started, I didn't start acting until I was in my early 20s, and it was always something in the back of my head, like, oh, I'd like to try this. And then the opportunity presented itself, and I took that first step. So this is the first step, is taking this little workshop. We'll do a little bit of scene work, and then maybe you like it, maybe you don't. But the second step would be, you know, we need actors and volunteers and stuff like that for the 24-Hour Miracle later on this month. So that's another great opportunity to kind of come in and have fun.
So you weren't, this is something you did really as an adult, you started out.
Oh yeah, for sure. It was something I always thought about. It's just the opportunity never really presented itself right there. And then things kind of fell into place, and I took an acting class and I loved it. So
And Stacy, are you, how are you involved in this? Are you just being dragged along by Frank?
I'm a board member with JDLT, and I'm helping to organize the workshops.
Are you an actress?
I am. I am. That is how Frank and I met.
Right.
I was also a theater major at the University of Hawaii.
Great. Oh, okay. So I guess it's kind of fun to be somebody you're not. Maybe that's what helps open people up and gives them the confidence.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, definitely.
So I was going to ask you, how do beginners get involved in acting? And I guess this is really a good way right here to get started.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully this will be one of the many. This might be something we do once a year, a couple times a year, just doing these workshops and giving people the opportunity to kind of try it out, I guess. And, I mean, that's another reason to follow us on Facebook and find our website, too.
And then can they audition for plays in this town?
Yeah, yeah, we're planning to do a full-length play sometime in the spring. The exact play is still to be determined, but yeah, we'll have auditions and stuff like that as well.
And for the upcoming 24-Hour Miracle in October 18th and 19th, there is no auditions. We just need actors to sign up. We need as many as we can, pretty much.
Yeah.
We'll take what we can get. What will happen is on the 18th, we'll all convene and we'll split up into the four teams for the four writers and four directors, and we'll split up however many actors have signed up, and that's how the writers know how many characters are in their play,
mm-hmm.
and they'll go write the play. 24 hours later, the actors will perform it. So
this is 24 consecutive hours?
24
like
consecutive
all night?
Hours.
Right.
Well,
usually the writer writes for 12, and then the actors and directors go for 12, and then we put it all up and see what happens.
And do people come and watch?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Great. Well, sounds like fun. I'm speaking with Frank Kattas and Stacy Kattas, and they are conducting a acting workshop on Saturday at the Nugget Mall Community Room, and that's from 1 to 3.
Right, and this is part two of our three workshops. Next week is going to be directing.
Oh, great. Okay, well, maybe I'll see you next week.
Excellent.
All right, thanks for coming in.
All right, thank you.
This is Bird Note. Uh-oh, we must have walked into a nesting territory. That's the loud and strident call of a sentinel bird, in this case, a killdeer. There it is, flying around and over our heads. Yes, these calls are arresting and annoying, but imagine what it would be like to be a fox hunting for the killdeer's nest. Killdeers are sentinel birds, birds that seem especially alert to predators. Birds of open country, they can see you or that fox coming from a long distance. Good flyers, they can keep out of harm's way while warning all the other killdeers in the area of your presence. But the killdeers aren't the only sentinel birds. The keck-keck-keck calls of black-necked stilts and the pleat calls of American avocets function in the same way. Loud, distracting, and very communicative, they serve to inform everyone in the area that a predator is present. Perhaps just as important, they tell the predator that it has been seen. Everyone is now aware of its presence, and it might just be time to find a quieter neighborhood. See a photo of a killdeer and catch a video of avocets and black-necked stilts on our website, birdnote.org. I'm Michael Stein.
Tonight on 360 North, at 8, your northern home offers advice about the Toyo stove. Native Report is next at 8:30. At 9, it's the story of the Choctaw Code Talkers, who joined the 1918 American Expeditionary Forces against the Germans. Then, Sisters documents the lives of American nuns in a film about faith and hope, love and death, and commitment to the service of others. That's at 10, tonight on 360 North and 360north.org.
And your turn to KTOO. This is a Juno afternoon. And my name is Martha Moore, and I have in the studio with me Adrian Schwartz and Greg Regester. And they're here to talk about the food service program for the Juneau School District. And let's just tell us first, What's your connection with the program, or are you employees of the school district?
Thank you for the introduction. My name is Adrienne Schwartz, and I am the food service supervisor for the Juneau School District. And I have here with me, I'll let Greg introduce himself.
Gregory Jester, I'm with Nana Management Services, and we do the actual food preparations and service at the school district.
Okay, great. And tell me a little bit about the food service program, or tell our listeners about the food service program.
Well, in general, the Juneau School District works with Nana Management Services, who's a food service management company, to prepare and deliver quality meals to students throughout each school day. And we do a lot of collaboration together. Not only do we work with Nana for our meal program, Nana also helps us with a fresh fruit and vegetable program at Glacier Valley and Riverbend Elementary Schools. Nana helps us to offer nutritional Alaskan foods on our menu on a regular basis, and much more. Maybe I can let Greg expand on some of the other things we do together.
Well, basically, we're here to support the school district in any way we can in getting foods out to kids so that they can be well-nourished, so that they can learn better. So we're involved with procurement on a lot of different fronts, from the Alaska Nutritional Foods, buying local salmon and fish items, vegetables that we can procure through Meriwether Farms like in Gus Davis or out of the Mat-Su Valley, and various things like that.
And what meals do you serve?
Breakfast and lunch primarily. We also offer a snack for the Head Start program at Gastineau Elementary.
And what students sign up for this, or is this offered to any student?
Yes, our meal service is offered to any student who wishes to participate in our program.
So if they don't get their meal through this program, they would be bringing it, or they would go off campus for it? Is that how it works?
Yes.
Okay. And so you do utilize local foods, local fish, did you say?
Yes, we do as much as we can. As we all know, most of the food comes from outside just because there isn't enough grown and produced within the state of Alaska, but we do really strive to purchase what is available to us, and we're able to buy local fish, and we were able to buy most of the carrots out of Meriwether Farms out of Gus Davis.
Great. Mm-hmm. So how long has this program been in place?
Well, the program, the actual meal program, has been in place for quite some time. We have been contracting with Nana Management Services since the 2008-2009 school year.
And so far, how did the kids like the food?
I actually feel like it's very well received. There's always, challenges to work through. So our very first year, we were reviewing the menu on a regular basis. We actually have a school lunch advisory board that is meeting monthly. And Greg actually attends all those meetings as well as I do. And so we made quite a few changes. We've done student surveys, tried to receive feedback from parents and staff. And so I think currently we're seeing a lot of pleased customers.
And what's the biggest challenge for getting kids to eat nutritional foods?
The biggest challenge we've had recently has been all the recent legislative changes, where they're mandating different colored fruits and vegetables, and to get sometimes young people to eat bean products or things along that line that they aren't exposed to on a regular basis, that's the biggest challenge in that they eat with their eyes first, and we need to get them to have it pass their lips to actually taste it.
Yeah, I guess that is a problem. Now, do the students sign up for this through how, their teachers?
There's a couple different ways to answer your question. In general, we do not require any students to pre-order a meal. So if they want to participate in the program on any given day, they can just get in our breakfast or lunch line and they'll be served a meal. In terms of students being eligible for free or reduced price meals, we have an application that we mail out at the beginning of every school year. It's also available on our Juneau School District website. And we also have the ability now for folks to apply online with an electronic signature.
Mm, great. Mm-hmm. But any child can come in and just pay for a breakfast or a lunch.
Yes.
That's great. And I know you you touched on why this is important. Is there anything else you want to say about what how food helps kids learn? Why is it connected with education?
It's a basic foundation. If a child has good rest and then they come to school well-nourished, or if they eat at school and are nourished throughout the day, then they're more apt to be able to learn properly.
And I agree. What I learned when I was in school is based on, I think it's Maslow's hierarchy of needs, that in order to be able to focus and learn and grow, that your basic needs have to be met first. And obviously proper nutrition and rest are two major key components of that.
Great. I'm talking with Adrian Schwartz and Greg Regester. And is there anything else you want to say about the food program?
I just would like to invite any students and even their parents to come and visit our schools and participate in our program and see what it's all about. I also want folks to know that we are always open for suggestions and feedback. The only way we really can meet people's needs and improve our program is if we know what it is that they're looking for.
Okay, great. And thank you so much, both of you, for coming in.
Thank you.
Appreciate hearing about
that.
Honolulu likes them. Nassau likes them. Madrid likes them. Paris likes them. Toronto likes them. Sydney likes them.
and all the nations like banana. That's it for today's Juno Afternoon. Thanks for joining me. Thanks to all the guests today. And to listen to any of today's interviews or any other Juno Afternoon programs, visit the KTOO.org website under Local Programs and Juno Afternoon. Please join us tomorrow at 3 p.m. for a Juno Afternoon. Our host will be Ann Fuller. Jordan Nigro will be here to highlight Friday's annual auction for sale. That's S-A-I-L sale. We'll get the details on Friday's Dale DeArmond exhibit opening at the City Museum. We'll talk with Valerie Snyder about the Brown Boot Costume Company. And Betty Adams with Joshua Adams from the Alaska Hotel will be here to talk about Hotel Impossible, that writer's almanac, music, and more tomorrow at 3 on KTOO-FM. The Wednesday hike for October 2nd will be a picnic at John Muir Cabin. Please bring either a salad or a dessert to share with the group. Bring water, trekking poles, and grippers, as the boards may be slippery. And wear warm, waterproof clothing and hiking boots. Group will determine final length and destination. Meet at the Spalding Trailhead, located at mile 12.3 Glacier Highway, at 9:30 a.m. No dogs or firearms, please, and have a great hike. The weather, tonight mostly cloudy, scattered showers, lows around 40. Wednesday, mostly cloudy, isolated showers in the morning, highs around 53. Thursday, rain, highs around 50. And Friday through Saturday, rain, highs around 50, lows around 42. You are listening to KTOO Juno. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Yuhuna, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We are also online on KTOO.org. Support for national programming for KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. Please stay tuned for All Things Considered.
And if you're going to take these extreme measures, you better have a plan to win. And I don't know that there's a plan to win.
Disagreement within the Republican Party over next steps in the government shutdown.
For Tuesday, October 1st, it's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Melissa Block. Coming up, 800,000 federal workers are furloughed in the first shutdown in 17 years.
Meanwhile, the new health insurance marketplaces launch nationwide.
My income is small. I'm a single mom, so we're going to see what my options are.
And what it means in states that have resisted the new health law.